Hey, it's the BZ Gamer Show! And this week we're talking Fallout 76 Wastelanders and whether skin and blood can breathe life back into the post-apocalyptic West Virginia landscape. Then we're breaking down everything we know about Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Stick around.
Hey everybody, it's James Davenport with the PC Gamer Show, and up first, we're talking Fallout 76 Wastelanders with none other than Lauren Morton, a common, frequent, long-time PC Gamer contributor.
Hello, that's me.
That is you, and you've been on the show, you were on the show a while back once, so we're going to, it's been a while, so let's reintroduce you, and Just get basically your entire life story in 2 minutes. No, I want to know. So you kind of started off with PC Gamer, but now you've written your bylines have been elsewhere. Where else can people kind of read your stuff, and where can they follow you? First of all, on the internets.
Oh yeah, I yell about things sometimes on Twitter, as everybody's want to do these days. Yep. You can find me doing various things on PC Gamer, as I always have, and writing news some of the time over at Rock Paper Shotgun, because apparently I don't do anything but PC stuff ever. Tries as I might. And very occasionally other various places, Kotaku once or twice, but mainly hang out with PC folks.
Right on. It's good to see your it's such a good feeling when I like read a random news article from another website or read a feature and I see a familiar name, and that's happened a couple times over the last couple of years with you, and it makes me very happy. A couple of things you've written. What are some things people might know that you've written for us, or favorite things you've written for us? I could name a few, but I want to know what you're most proud of. Some good features.
A few things have come up recently. One of my personal favorites got re-promoted and republished recently was Sleeps on Bridges, the laziest but not actually laziest player in Elder Scrolls Online. That's a big favorite of mine. And then I think my first piece ever that you commissioned from me got put back on Twitter a couple weeks ago also, and that was Why We Praise the Sun in Dark Souls. And that was a fun one. That was a good thing to get to do first. Yeah. So those are two fun ones, and then people might also know me for penises in video games. Why is making them so hard? I feel like
all-timer.
I was really proud that I sent that to Wes with that headline, and he said, "That's the best Slack notification I've ever gotten." And I said, "So we're doing it, right?"
Some great work, great stuff. I wanted to say this before we move on to speaking of Dark Souls. I'm so ready for Elden Ring, so we get like five plus more years, maybe a decade of great features.
I know, I can't wait. And it's been too long. One of my a friend of mine brought it up or was asking about it recently, and I think I just kept saying to them, "Oh, Elden Ring," and like quoting various weird passages of the trailer, and they were not as into it as I
was. Oh, bummer. They just don't get it. They don't get it.
No, they don't understand.
So what kind of stuff do you typically play? What's your jam?
So we're here to talk about Fallout, and that is one of my jams. Certainly, I'm a big RPG person a lot of the time. What else? We just saw some Yakuza stuff today during that Xbox, and I've never played a Yakuza game, and I keep thinking that that's a mistake I've made. And someone who knows more about them described them to me today as, what was it, the perfect amount of hunks, punches, and drama and silliness, or something like that. And I was like, okay, sounds about right. And these hunks,
these hunks have feelings too. It's amazing. These hunks have feelings. It's
every crazy attack animation people gif of a Yakuza game makes me think more and more that I should be playing them. Like the weird cell phone things, or like there was a crying giant baby. So I play RPGs, but I want to be someone who plays Yakuza games.
Okay.
So.
All right. It's something very realistic to aspire to, I think. Cool. Well, Lauren, thanks for being here. We're going to be talking today, though, about, like you said, Fallout 76 Wastelanders. Gosh, it's been out for like about a month now. So it's had a month to kind of percolate. Oh, less than a month, about 3 weeks. Some time to like, people have had time to actually see how it articulates in something like the long term. This is the update that brought human NPCs to the game, which is kind of a weird thing to say, and probably will sound weirder and weirder the further we get away from it. Like a Fallout game launched without people in it. Did you know this?
Mm-hmm. It was weird at launch, and it kept being weird. You're right. The further we get away from it, the more that like year end change will be like, wait, it was ever, they ever weren't there.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Was that the case?
Yeah, and it's funny because maybe you can kind of detail why don't you just, it's kind of hard to parse, I think, if you're just coming into this game for the first time or the first time in a long time. The first Fallout 76, the original release, you know, it was a bunch of robots and terminals were sort of like taking you through the early days of the wasteland. This is like... closer to the Fallout than a lot of the other games in the series, if I'm not mistaken. So there are fewer people venturing out. And how do they kind of like change it without destroying what was there? How do they bring people in, and how does that articulate? How does that sort of change what you're doing and seeing moment to moment?
Yeah. So one of the... probably the best thing they did in incorporating and explaining it is they said, okay, it's a year later in our world. Also, it's a year later now in the world of Fallout 76. The people weren't there before, and they've come back because it's been a whole year now. And that helps like massively just help you, you know, suspend your disbelief and the whole thing. Like, what do you mean people just reappeared? How silly is that? But you know, a year later, life is, you know, folks are coming back into the mountains from other places. When it launched, it was odd because you were constantly chasing behind the main quest. You were following the overseer from your vault. It opened up and she's now gone out into the wasteland and you're following in her footsteps kind of, but the only way that you know of her is through these holotapes that she has left behind. Many other people whose holotapes you listen to are dead, and you're just hearing stories of people who died, you know, in the war and everything, but she is still out there just two steps ahead of you conveniently at all times, and you never get to meet her. And, they sort of revamped that main quest now, where you pop out and she's got her own house in Appalachia. She got a place to be now. So that's one of the biggest changes and sort of tie-ins that they did was, you know, you're still dealing with your overseer, but now you actually get to talk with her instead.
She's kind of like one of the first, not one of the first people you meet at all, but one of the first big sort of quest givers. It's weird too, especially because what stands out to me is like, this is not like a, they approached it like narratively in a seamless way, you know, like you said, a year later. It is really weird to have these unfinished quests that are from the initial release.
The before times.
It's like, I just met the overseer in my playthrough Fallout 76 pretty recently. And I'm still collecting tapes from her journey a year ago. go here next. You know, and like, it's kind of drains it of the mystery and intrigue, but I don't know. It's fine. It's like, it's whatever. It's like, now it kind of, supports it in as sort of like, I don't know, if you want that, initial story, it's there and you get a little flavor and color, but, talk to me about how, cause when I think of Fallout games with NPC, like just throwing a bunch of like human dolls into this game, wasn't going to fix it. What do the NPCs like really represent in terms of human NPCs really represent in terms of like making Fallout 76 a more enjoyable game?
Yeah.
If they work.
They do. Mm-hmm. I'm always, I've been so cautious with Fallout 76 because when it began, I just enjoy Fallout as a setting. And the whole time I think I've been trying to rectify what it is I enjoy about Fallout and what Fallout 76 has. And so, you know, I'm kind of primed from the beginning. You know, I want to like this. And I see, I saw the problems it had at launch. But at every big milestone, I want to like it. And I think now it deserves to be liked, definitely. Because in Fallout games of the past, I think my favorite moments are always like the wild situations that you walk into with people and the like ridiculous things that they're doing. and how they justify that. I mean, you know, you go into New Vegas and you meet the cannibal society on the strip or and just like random people doing silly things. And it's the same in Fallout 4. And I think that's what Fallout 76 needed, that you can sort of get from the robots. Like the Mr. Handys are funny and they can say funny stuff, but it's not the same as people that are unreliable and or unintelligent or lying or ridiculous or any other thing. I think they're what I enjoy most about Fallout. So that's one of the things that 76 benefits from in having them, is setting up silly situations that you can walk into. Like that, I'm sure you ran across the guy. I think most people I've talked to have at this point, that runs by you screaming, "Please, please, like, help me, it's going to kill me," or something like that. And chasing behind him is a chicken, just a chicken. That's it. And he was so upset and so afraid. And I can't explain that situation. You know, it's just a small one-off moment, but you know, putting all those together is enjoyable. So that's the big benefit is wacky situations and weirdo people in the wasteland.
And do you think like the writing stacks up? Is it there for you? Is some of the quest design, or at least those scenarios? And we won't like spoil any big beats here, but sorry, chicken spoiler. There's a chicken in the game.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it kind of matches the tone and humor, exceeds it or defies expectations in any ways? Or is it kind of just like on par, Fallout, it suffices, it works? Or does it fall short? Where are you at in terms of flavor?
For me, I think it kind of sits at par.
Okay.
Which makes sense, because that's about honestly where Fallout 4 sat for me, was kind of on par. And it's been a minute since I've played Fallout 4, so I'd struggle to give any specific examples. Mm-hmm. But, you know, both, I think, as you said, kind of on par. Like, they understand the setting. They understand what's funny about it sometimes. I don't think I've come across any people that I just, like, love and will never forget, or, like, any storylines that will just, like, stick with me necessarily. But, you know, it's got that flavor. It's got the silly, like, oh, no, capitalism makes a mess of things. Like, people are less important than profit, and companies do strange stuff. I signed, I guess, a couple days ago, I was in the Nuka-Cola factory, and unrelated to the quest I was there for, there was just a terminal where you could look at and sign a, I don't remember if it was a non-disclosure agreement. I think it was. Basically just explaining that, like, as a tester in the Nuka-Cola factory, like, you could experience all of these things. And it was super long and silly, as real non-disclosure agreements are. But also over the top, because you could die from the soda. Because it's Fallout, so of course you probably could. Yeah, you never
know.
Of course.
Well, I mean, that's good to hear. So the evaluation, and like from my, again, I'm like, I played like another initial 12 hours of this, and I still don't know where I sit, because there is some weird gating stuff. Like there are some quests with people at the beginning of the game, but a lot of it is kind of like, if I'm not mistaken, gated behind like this level 20 story quest, where the Overseer finally, you kind of like sends you off into the world, and some of the more, the newer, Wastelanders content is there. But, Jesus, forgot the hell I was thinking. Oh yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, do it, like you said, on par, feels like a Fallout game. It feels like I'm playing some kind of lost Fallout game from somewhere between New Vegas and Fallout 4, with random weird multiplayer elements that don't really mean much anymore unless you want them to. They don't hurt. I don't know. I guess, like, okay, let me ask you, where do you think the multiplayer sits in this now? And do you even care about it? Is it something that you consider when you play? Is it something that you hope to see expanded, or are you just more interested in the narrative and the world building from here on?
I've actually been playing through most of it with one friend. So that's been, it has been nice. And I think from the beginning, the multiplayer part was cool. It's not central to Fallout as a series to me. The whole game is an odd duck, right? So we'll just like preface with that. Fallout 76 is kind of an odd duck. But the Wastelanders update made it so that I could go to some of my friends who had bought it at launch, floundered, left, not enjoyed it. I could say to them, come back and play with me. You might like it now. And I have one friend who's really enjoying it, playing through it with me. We've chosen different paths through the main story. So we're both playing through each other's quests. So we get to see both of them. Yeah. And like we chose different companions that we're focusing on. There are like two big ones since the main update. And I took my friend along for the final quest with, or, you know, currently the final quest with Beckett the bartender, who's my companion of choice. So he got to see the finale of that story, even though he's with Space Chick Commander Daguerre, I think is her name. So yeah, the multiplayer has been good for me, despite the fact that in most online RPGs, I am a solo person. Like, I'll play the online game, but solo, but it just by happenstance, I've been playing with a friend, so...
Interesting. Yeah, it's interesting you say like you're playing through each other's quests. And in Fallout, in the Wastelanders update, as I understand it from the preview you wrote, some of these quests actually like are instanced and lead into different world states, or at least like statuses with varying factions in the world. So the choice and consequence is there. It's not global for everyone. It's kind of, you know, it's again, instance to your personal choices. But I'm wondering, do you feel like those, that was your question at the beginning of your first preview, was like, how is this going to actually play out? How are these, or how are these consequences actually going to matter? Do you feel like the, that big, do you feel like it's kind of small fry stuff, Do you feel like these choices and consequences are actually consequential, or do you feel like they're just kind of like working with this really kind of rigid, odd framework and doing a decent Fallout impression?
Right. I will say generally, before I get into the part where like I wrote my preview and I had that question, like how much are these things actually going to matter? And then the next night I played and I had a good experience that was memorable. But just broadly speaking, I had to think about what it is that I wanted from choice and consequence in a Fallout setting, right? Like you have some, like, you know, you'll be like the ending of New Vegas is kind of the quintessential one, right? There's lots of choices. You can go kind of any way. Lots of things you do kind of come back and matter. And that's really cool. But really, I think when it comes to RPG choices, all I want is to be like acknowledged and surprised a little bit. Like we saw what you did, we saw what you chose, and it doesn't have to change the story on a macro level. It can be a minute to minute thing, because if I get a laugh out of like, I didn't think that was going to happen, like that's good enough for me. Okay. Like I enjoyed it. I don't think I was expecting a world changing story out of Fallout 76. So, you know, sometimes you want like these big decisions that really change the story and they matter and like it says something. But in Fallout setting, like I said, the weird characters matter most to me. Gotcha. So I think it's those small things minute to minute that are more impactful and I enjoy. And on that note, the night after or two nights after, I think I finished playing on the public test or the private test server. Mm-hmm. I got into the live build on my save and kind of redid everything. And I chose a new path through that Wayward quest.
Yeah.
You know, you go in and there's some raiders bothering them and you have to figure out what to do about it. And to avoid any spoilers for that, because I was amused and I enjoyed it, I chose a different path through that quest. I chose a different option. And when I came back to turn in the quest, there were a very different situation played out to the one that I had on the test server that surprised me. I wasn't expecting them to have gone through with like a cutscene, as it were, in Fallout style, of like characters reacting to what I had decided to do. So it was a good moment, and I was surprised, and I felt like that successfully got what I wanted out of a Fallout human story. I guess it's just some surprise, something funny to laugh at.
Okay, cool. Well, that's like, I think that's going to be the big green light for a lot of folks, is just that kind of information. You can play this with friends or not and still kind of get that Fallout flavor, choices, consequences, and still see people running around randomly.
Yeah. And there's silly stuff, right? Like that first Wayward quest, they have you build a thing at your base as part of the quest, like a big sign.
Yeah.
Anybody who's come into the game, there's like four bases around the bar, so all with the same sign. And like, it's silly. But I don't know. That's how online games are, right?
Yeah.
I forgive a certain amount because, like, what are you going to do?
Little jank. It's fine.
Yeah.
Something I noted while I was playing is, and I wrote a feature on this, is that I think the base building makes way more sense in Wastelanders, especially because I think the marketing around the original release was like a little, it was tipped toward that DayZ sensation of like, oh, you're going to run into people and maybe have a standoff and blah, blah, blah. It's just not the case. And it's especially not the case now. If you do run into people, you're probably going to emote at each other and maybe melee each other just because. But most people have like whatever option turned on that makes it hard to PvP. Because it's not a fun game to PvP in, frankly. But
no,
with these new companions and Wastelanders strewn about the map, you sort of see a lot of these houses propped up using the crafting system. And you kind of ambiently see more of that at work, the camp system. And it feels like to me, and maybe you can tell me, having played more of the game, more of the Wastelanders quests, that a lot of the quests are like sort of more, maybe not like fundamentally tied into the camp system, either giving you rewards for customization and like kind of building out a space of your own. But I got the impression that was the case. And I sort of felt, maybe it's because I'm coming off the tail of Animal Crossing, I felt more encouraged and rewarded for spending time on a base, especially seeing my companions' little bases. They aren't like that fancy, but there's a real sense of sort of coming up in the world and like making a comfortable home, becoming self-sufficient. And that's really at the fore, seeing all these Wastelanders. Do you feel like that is the case, or are you like Chris Livingston and just have a sad little platform still and make it work?
No, for one, I loved your bathing suit outfit in that feature. I looked at it and I was like, what outfit is that? I need to figure out what that is. Whenever they let us change the clothes on our companions, they might be getting a bathing suit. anyway, as far as the focus on, you know, different people's camps and investing in the sort of the homemaking, I think it was a little bit there from the start, but like you, I keep calling it like it started out as Fallout Rust, right? Survival PvP kind of thing. And it's morphed into Fallout mostly PvE.
Yeah.
When they added the shops, player shops, the vending machines,
yeah.
you started to see a lot more care. People already did cool things with their bases, but there was a much bigger incentive because you could find people on the map easier by mm-hmm. traveling to their stores. The neat things people would do, you know, some people made traps, some people made bars, some people made weird art installations out of their camps. And it's definitely now taken another step up, I think, from that you have your companions that hang out there. Once you meet them and build their little mm-hmm. items, they can hang out. And I'm definitely with you. I'm a base builder. Mine wasn't great before, but when I came back, I found a new location, started over again. Now I've got a cute little, I don't know, sort of like dock bar thing going on.
Nice.
That I'm really liking. So yeah, I'm definitely into the homemaking, aspect of it. I'm certainly with you. It's a reason to stay and be in the environment and enjoy it. I've never been like a raider, or not in the Fallout sense, in the, you know, MMO sense. So having a place to invest in is more important than me, or yeah. to me.
And I hope that they lean into that in the end game, or mm-hmm. I don't even know what the fuck the end game is, honestly. I hear, like, I get glimpses of it from the subreddit and such, and it's like, yeah, we nuked a place mm-hmm. and now we're killing the Scourge beast and doing it. I'm like, I don't really care about like min-maxing my gear.
Yeah.
I more care about like just the sense of like mastering a space and like becoming familiar with it and like making a mark on it. And I don't know, mm-hmm. Wastelanders, even though it's not really a facelift for the world overall, it does feel like it's sort of leaning into the themes of reclamation. And I don't know, I'm just overall more empowered and encouraged to play through it just from a base level. Not even just because there's like living, breathing humans in there, but just for the energy that has sort of fundamentally changed playing that game. Mm-hmm.
You said facelift. one quick thing.
Yeah.
I've been playing through the story of the companion quests for Beckett, the guy who's like a bartender, and had a good time. And one of the things I have specifically noticed while playing is he's a great voice actor, very very good, conveys a lot of emotion. I love it. And the funny thing is it highlights how much emotion cannot be conveyed by Fallout characters' yeah. faces or bodies. Yeah. I mean, he's giving this very empowering speech while standing very still, and just his mouth and his eyebrows slightly move. Also, he has yeah. sunglasses, so that does not help. But it's just funny, and it's just the nature of the old creation engine beast, yeah. I guess. But
yeah.
The voice actors deserve some credit. They do a great job as best as they can.
Yeah, there's a good amount of good writing and good voice work to prop all that up. And I think it feels like the developers know that's something they gotta drop some cash on, some good voice work. So Fallout 76 Wastelanders, it's, I don't know, final word. Is this do you think it's like ready for can you endorse this for everyone, strictly Fallout fans, or I don't get the impressions it's a no-go for you anymore. But who is this for now,
right.
in its current state? Who are you endorsing this for?
I'd say Fallout fans,
okay.
for sure. And that's not to say that it's going to be your favorite Fallout game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the best Fallout game, I don't think. But It is a Fallout game. It's in the setting. It now has NPCs that are cool. You're not getting a Fallout game again until who knows when, until after Starfield and Elder Scrolls 6.
20 years.
So
20 years.
CNC yeah,
years.
This is what you've got for Fallout for a while, probably, unless they hand off the license to somebody else.
Yeah.
And when it came out and it was a little bit disappointing, there were clearly some things missing, lacking, lots of bugs, all that. Like, what I said to my friends was, this is how Elder Scrolls Online was when it came out. Mm. It was also kind of a mess. And, you know, Bethesda didn't do that internally. ZeniMax Online did that one. And I said, I think what we should hope for is that it pulls a turnaround at about the year one mark. That's about what Elder Scrolls Online did. I don't remember exactly how long the one Tamriel update took to come out, but there was a clear point at which it was like, Elder Scrolls Online is good now, actually. And we should hope for that for Fallout 76. And I think this is it, the Wastelanders update. Like, this is the Fallout thing it really needed to make it worth saying, yeah, if you like Fallout, you should just play it because, you know, why not?
I get the same impression. This is the beginning. And I think that's our hope right now. And it's going to be one to keep an eye on. And we definitely will be. Like, I'm pretty into it. This is the beginning of that turnaround, that trajectory that hopefully Bethesda can sustain and find a nice rhythm of, you know, kind of updates and give it a new sort of cadence in life that we kind of had hoped for from the start. But, you know, we've seen worse games turn around in bigger ways. And for better or worse, sort of an industry norm at this point, it's become like a thing.
Yeah.
And probably from a business perspective, I can't quite pick apart, is probably, you know, going to be a thing for a while. You know, take a lower risk on a lower budget thing and see if you can get the anchorage to turn it around. I think we're in a, it's going a good direction. I'm going to be playing more of it for sure. And decking out my crappy base and making it feel like home.
But, yeah.
Cool. Well, shit. Thanks for coming, Lauren. It's
thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you. We'll get you on here more often and talk about, I think when...
The year of RPGs.
Yes. When Elden Ring season happens, it's going to be just like the James and Lauren show for a couple months.
Yeah.
Anyway, cool. Next up, we got Chris Livingston and I are going to be talking about Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Hey everybody, we're back. It's James here with PC Gamer, and joining me is Chris Livingston to talk about Assassin's Creed Valhalla. There's a new one of those games.
Vikings.
A pretty original setting, you know? Pretty wild, original theme and setting. Vikings are pretty chic post God of War. There's a big popular anime and manga. Have you heard of this?
No.
Vinland.
Whichever one you're talking about, I would not have heard of.
Oh,
I'm shit. Not up on the manga scene.
I'm not either, but I watched this Vinland Saga. It's just cool to be a Viking right now. And
beards and axes.
Right. It's kind of the era. A lot of artisanal chocolate makers finally seeing themselves represented in media. It's good to know, good to see. And Assassin's Creed Valhalla was announced last week. It was rumored for a long time. You know, there was kind of the usual cycle of, I think, Schreier leaks, Kotaku leaks or something like that. And Ubisoft can't keep a cap on this stuff, no matter how hard they try.
Well, with how many did they say? 14 different studios around the world kind of working on it. I guess it's tough. I guess you can't really. I mean, how could you really keep a lid on everything?
No,
but yeah, it's something we've kind of known about for a while, but finally are getting a little bit of look at with a couple of trailers.
Yeah, we got that cinematic trailer last week. Just today, this morning, we got a gameplay trailer, and I'm doing the finger quotes here because, as your headline succinctly states, there's probably 2 to 3 seconds of actual gameplay. It's all in engine, so to speak, but functionally, like, doesn't really do much more than last week's cinematic trailer.
There's not much of, like, say, you know, seeing the character being controlled by someone. I mean, you can see some of the things it looks like he's capable of doing in combat, at least, but it's not from any kind of, like, gameplay perspective. It's still very much a cinematic trailer, just with a little bit of action that's not you know, just like a movie.
Yeah, that's fine. It's sure we got the flavor here, and we have some information to kind of build off of. They didn't just throw out these trailers in a vacuum. We know things about this game. And first off, though, I kind of want to get your what's the Livingston take from here? Because did you enjoy Odyssey? Did you enjoy Origins? Sort of what's your...
So I played Origins and I liked it a lot. I have not played Odyssey yet, so I've not really experienced the whole RPG thing that it brought back. I understand people really enjoyed it. And it was this big kind of shift, I guess, for the game, which sounds really exciting to me. I just never got down and actually played it because it sounded like it was like 100 hours plus. And I was like, it's the kind of thing like I should be doing now when I've got, you know, a bit of extra time. And I probably will play before Valhalla comes out. So I don't know. I don't really know what the RPG stuff is like. I really enjoyed Origins. I thought it was like just a fantastic world they built. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of fun with it. The one thing I wasn't really a fan of, and I'm kind of hoping it's not in Valhalla, is the way they kind of sectioned off the world, kind of MMO style, where it's like, oh, you need to, this region is suitable for your level, and this region is, you know, 5 levels above you. So if you go there, you know, the most basic grunt is just going to waste you instantly, which I get. Like, I understand that whole concept of games, but I have trouble with, I don't know, I guess the internal logic of a coyote in this part of the world, I can kill with a stick, and a coyote in this part of the world is level 50 and will destroy me. So it's not my favorite thing. It didn't bother me so much in Origins because the world was so big and I thought the progression was pretty good. Like it felt in time with my natural progression through the world that when I had gained enough levels to go someplace, I was kind of already ready to go there. But in terms of like, oh, I just want to forget about quests and the story and just go explore, I don't like this kind of sectioning off of zones. It's not my favorite thing in the world.
Yeah, it kind of sucks the wind out of your sails a little bit when you have that very press conference-y moment of, oh, look, a mountain. Can I go there? And the answer is yes in these games, but if you manage to avoid being spotted by an enemy. Yeah.
And it can really get in the way of, you know, if you are following a storyline and you've gotten, say this quest has like, you know, five chapters to it and you get to chapter 4 and you're like, I can't wait to see how this quest ends. And then it turns out the 5th chapter and is in some part of the world that you're not even close enough. So then you have to like, well, I guess I'll grind a bunch of side quests or, you know, raiding quests or whatever, and that can really throw a wrench into the kind of internal storyline you're kind of playing with. Like, would my character just go, well, I really need to figure out the end of this, you know, my revenge tale or whatever, but first I'm going to go do a bunch of tasks for the village. You know, it can kind of throw you off if it's not paced out properly.
So. Yeah, and Odyssey had that problem too. It may be worse than Origins. It's been a while, but I remember at the time, like, I don't know who wrote the op-ed on our website, but someone said like, I'm having a much better time playing with like this paid for leveling boost, which is
right.
Yeah, but Valhalla is kind of following, from what we know, is going to be made sort of in a similar framework to these last Assassin's Creed games. The emphasis is on role playing. It's less on sort of the earlier structure of those Assassin's Creed games, which were all about like climbing and all, you know, all that stuff will be in there. Locomotion system, traversal. But the emphasis here is on more of a Witcher style and pace of game, where you're a third person character, you're running around this big world, and you know, you have dialogue choices to make. You can sort of like impress your, in Odyssey, sort of limited, but there was a spectrum of role playing there and personality there onto these sort of more rigid, more broadly rigid characters. So, you know, you felt like you were sort of playing a role and making an impression on this character and the world at large. Again, like Odyssey, you'll be able to play man or woman, which is pretty cool. I think Cassandra, if you do play, you should play, get a taste of Odyssey and just go play Cassandra at least for a bit, Chris, because like, I'm forgetting Origins character. He was great. Ubisoft.
It's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember his name.
Yeah, Ubisoft is really kind of killing it with some of their protagonists lately. Mm-hmm. I don't remember liking many of them before this. Ezio was like cool in a brooding way, and maybe just through pure exposure over three games or whatever he was around for. But the writing and the characterization is like, it's pretty fucking good, at least on a player protagonist level. Sometimes the stuff that extends outward and the broader narrative isn't always killing it. But Valhalla, let's sort of talk some details. This is set during 9th century England, and yeah, you're playing gosh, what's his name? Ivor?
I don't know if it's Ivor or Ivor. I can't recall how they pronounced it. I would just say Ivor. I don't know. Ivor, Ivor?
Ivor sounds a little bit too Eeyore. The Winnie the Pooh associations probably aren't doing any favors. But yeah, you're a warrior and a Viking clan leader. do you know much about Viking history, Chris? You a scholar in this
I know they had cool boats. Very excited to see some boats. I think Assassin's Creed boats are just always kind of fun.
Yeah.
I hope there's a lot of stuff in boats. I hope my Viking boat rowers, I don't know, they probably have an actual name. I hope they sing songs. I'd like to hear some Viking songs. And I hope there's some kind of ship combat. There was only a very little in Origins.
Yeah, it was like flashbacks or something.
It was like a flashback to a different character, but it's still just kind of badass. I think they make it very exciting. Apparently you can sail up and get your crew out and go attack castles and settlements and forts and things like that. The trailer showed a battering ram, which I am always a fan of in games, especially after playing Bannerlord for a while. So it's good to have a nice little battering ram session with the castle you're sieging.
Yeah, raids are a thing. So raids aren't going to be just like this kind of like implied, you know, you're a Viking, it's implied you're raiding and maybe see it in a cutscene or two. Raids are a thing you'll be executing, which is pretty cool. You'll also have a hub. And I love, I'm a sucker for these. I don't know about you, but like a hub that evolves. There's going to be like a village or something you'll return to that will grow and change depending on sort of your progression through the story.
I guess you build a settlement in England. I was kind of thinking when I first heard it would be like in Norway and you would go back to it, but it's in England, and you can upgrade it. You make the barracks bigger. You can have a tattoo parlor, which sounds pretty dope. I'm gonna get every tattoo in the game. I think that'll be my main quest. I love the idea. I'm trying to think of like games that have really done the settlement management well, and it seems like it's almost always kind of disappointing, but it's still something that really appeals to me. Like, oh, there's a place I can go, so I'm not just like this kind of untethered character in a world just kind of running around.
Yeah.
There's a place you can go and spend some time. And I guess that's where your kind of romantic storylines might play out.
Oh.
From what I understand. And you can also, they haven't given a lot of details on this, but you can like create a custom Viking raider, like a member of your crew, and like you can lend him to like your friends for them to use in raids. And so if they use your Viking in a raid, you get some of the loot. I don't know. It sounds weird, but kind of cool. Like just kind of crafting some kind of like
trading. I'm going to like make you a, hey buddy, I made you something.
I'm gonna send him back with a bunch of new tattoos if that's possible.
Oh, that'd be great. Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I don't know. It's the setting and the who you're playing is intriguing. Like from just a, I don't know, thematic perspective, gameplay perspective. I like the idea of me being a kind of a monster and pillaging, taking, warmongering as I see fit. And expanding down into England, because this was the history of the time between 860 and 900 AD. Viking armies were just kind of like trying to lay waste and conquest to as much of England as they could and elsewhere, right? And so we'll see England kind of pushing back against that too. So it'll be kind of cool to see that. Those historical figures come into play, which is more concrete historical figures, I guess, come into play, because that's sort of a staple of I love and hate Assassin's Creed's treatment of his history, because it's fun from just a very pulpy standpoint. Like, I know. Yeah, I think I read about that guy once. Oh, he's evil here. He's evil in the game.
Right.
But those broad strokes are also really reductive. And it's like, I don't know, were Vikings good? Is your character a hero? And, you know, and do you think Ubisoft or the writing or has the ability to cast them in a, you know, morally ambiguous light? I don't know. That wasn't necessarily the case with Odyssey. It was definitely like Templars versus Assassins, and everything annoyingly, a lot of these political factions tend to like just be on the side of one or the other, rather than, you know, sort of aloof and unaware and the nuance isn't there. But I don't know. Do you feel attached or bothered or to these guys or bothered by any of that stuff at all on your end? Or are you just kind of here along for the Disney Park, Universal Studios history tour?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we'll see if there's any kind of real nuance or anything to it. It is all sort of, you know, kind of silly in a way. But I think, you know, they've always done such great things with the setting and the detail that's built in. And obviously, like, even if they're, you know, very heavily tampering with history, they do a lot of homework when it comes to a place in time and how like how dedicated they kind of are to making it this kind of you know, realistic place that feels, you know, it feels real. It feels real and realistic, and the detail is usually pretty incredible. So I'm looking forward to kind of running around and being a Viking.
Yeah, it's I think that's like one of the things that stood out. Origins and Odyssey, it's bonkers the scale at which these worlds like exist. And not only that, the systems within them. I remember GDC or somewhere, there was a talk about how, I mean, you read a lot of like back or kind of PR filtered quotes about every NPC has a job or whatever, but literally all of these NPCs are just going about their day to day, and you can press a button in these games to like watch them speed up time, and they'll bring stuff around and carry boxes to and fro that into, you know, like fruit and such that makes sense. Boats will like make trips back and forth between trading posts and yada yada. And there's a real like sense of life to these worlds. And, you know, I think a lot of the, and I blame myself for this too, is like a lot of the, talk about these games sort of like approaches from a narrative perspective, when really what really sticks with me in these games is just like, again, the world itself. It's, these are some of the most impressive, mind-boggling open worlds in games like today. And
yeah, I would go like instantly from kind of staring out at the horizon and going, holy crap, look at that world, to like staring at some tile work on a street, you know, 2 inches from my face, you know, as part of, in a part of the map that like no one else is going to go to. And it's like, look at this incredible, it's like a macro and micro detail are both like just that make you just stop.
Yeah.
Stop what you're doing and just kind of admire it for a while. So that's always super impressive. I mean, I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, just the world they've created this time.
Yeah. And other details here. I'm reading through our, you can go check out, go to just Google this game, NPC Gamer.
Yeah, also if you're a fan of the modern day storyline, type stuff, which I should say, like, I know a lot of people are, because I remember,
yeah,
I kind of made some snarky remark in some Assassin's Creed thing I wrote with, like, can we skip this animus crap, please? And like, there are people who really love it and are really into it. Which is fun, which is like great. I was surprised. I thought this stuff was kind of hokey and silly, and it's like I always hated being dragged out of the the past into the future and to like be walking around an office or whatever the story is. Like I think maybe it's just my brain. It's like I just want to focus on the historical story and my character and not have to like juggle this whole other timeline and stuff. Like, yeah, just let me back to run around and jump into hay bales and stab people in the neck. But yes, there is a continuation of the character from the last two games, which I can barely remember.
I played like 150 hours of Odyssey and I can't remember a single thing about that's the, no, I do remember. Okay. You know what though? Like, I'm not going to spoil anything. I think they are taking it in a better direction. Based on what I played in Odyssey, at least in terms of how they integrate the more fantastic shit with the historical stuff. And Odyssey was good at this, also bad at this, because before there were like tiny interludes, like literally like 5 to 10 minute interludes, where you head back to the modern time as you do in Assassin's Creed games. But the bulk of that stuff was, say, for the very end of the game. And front-loading it was, you know, like just a bunch of, hey, here's, we're going to go around this, but it's history. What's up? You got a boat. Don't worry about that future stuff. Not too integrated. But at the end, and this isn't a spoiler, I guess, because there's literal like DLC trailers out there for it. You know, Atlantis is brought into the mix. And I hope to see this. I really hope to see this in Valhalla, at least, maybe not like until the very end again, but rope in mythology, like over the top of history, slowly, subtly. Don't go full God of War with it, but, you know, get a little mystic and strange rather than just go, it's sci-fi, we're in the future now. Rope in some of that, like that cultural flavor that the setting provides, and I don't know, give it that, give it a more subtle sci-fi, fantasy vibe than a more contrived, like, I'm in a giant iPod that makes me see my ancestors' thoughts. I don't know. I think they're on a, this is a long-winded fucking way of saying the trajectory is good for that. I'm also like just so bored by it, but it's coming back. We're going to be doing more, I don't know, what is it called? The Animus? Animus? Stepping into Animus? A thing. Yeah. And
yeah. Yeah, I don't, I guess I vaguely remember some of that from Origins. I think it was like special encounters, like you could go and fight some kind of like Egyptian god or something. I don't recall really doing much of it, but it wasn't like, you know, you're just wandering around Egypt and then there's some mythological stuff happening. It was sort of felt like it was kind of self-contained.
Right. It's integrated better later on. And so I think maybe this is the long play. Just make every Assassin's Creed game a God of War game, but only at the end. Only at the end or in the DLC. excuse me. Ooh. You briefly mentioned smooching. So smooching is a thing. There's going to be those romances are back, and I think Origins, you were kind of stuck with your the story partner, which is good. She was great. She's amazing. Odyssey.
Yeah, because you were married in that, I guess,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that was a, actually, that was like really, that was like one of the things that kind of kept me playing that game was that relationship was so interesting. And I'm mad I can't remember their names. But Odyssey, I just had sex with literally Bayek. Everyone, and it was a reward.
Was it Bayek?
Bayek. Boom. There it is. Anna? Was Anna the other one?
I can't remember. Yeah. I got one name. That's all my brain's going to cough up today.
I'm seeing... I'm guessing you wrote this. What's up with the bear? There's a bear.
Yeah, what's up with the bear? So yeah, I was this. They, you know, Ubisoft has this press site where, you know, press people can log in and like get assets like screenshots and stuff. And they had already released all of them, but I saw one with a bear in it. And I was like, hey, what's with the bear? They didn't release that. Maybe there's like a bear. Maybe you can be friends with a bear. But I think it's what it is I remembered that Origins had this
yes.
animal taming system. You could make friends with animals and they would kind of follow you around. And I think I composed an army of hippos at some point.
I remember now. Okay.
I don't remember anything about it. It just sounds like something I would do. So yeah, I think that's probably what it is. Like there's a bear, there are bears and you can tame them would be my guess. There was taming in
yes Odyssey. It was again Odyssey. It was sort of like a skill you got if you wanted on the tree. I'm wondering, and this is the trend with a lot of Ubisoft games, is you know they follow the same structure but they will tend to blow out certain systems or highlight certain systems in the sequels, even if like this like Far Cry games, you know, like Far Cry Primal was what if we just made a whole game about taming animals in a Far Cry map, and it's pretty good. I will debate anyone. Far Cry Primal is pretty fun. You could ride a fucking bear, for God's sake. It was great. It'd be nice to see some of those systems teased out and sort of like played with, and I'm certain we will, especially because why would you make this key art with a bear with a roomy eyeball and a scar over the top of it if you weren't going to make this bear like a main character? Or an important character, but
and I guess you have a crow because everyone's got a bird. All the protags have birds, right?
Yep.
So you can do that, like
that kind of scouting system will be
sky view scouting kind of thing. That's always pretty cool.
A lot of the same stuff. It's like it's funny because the gameplay trailer again did not show much gameplay, but you could just infer so much based on the last two games. And, you know, I'm not mad about it. It's going to be real interesting to see. And I think the big questions I have are, and one was addressed, I don't remember where I read it, but, Valhalla won't be the longest Assassin's Creed game. I think some of the feedback from Odyssey was that it was too big. Can you imagine in 2020?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think big is great. I guess I can see if you don't have a lot of time, but then, you know, why not take your time? And it, I guess it depends on what the size means. Does it mean I have to do a million side quests to finish? Or does it mean, like, cause you know, Red Dead Redemption 2 is so long. It was so long, but I kind of loved how long it was because when a game is really long, it can kind of, it's like reading a big novel, you know, 10 pages a night. Like after a few months, it kind of becomes a little part of your life. And so I like when games are long as they're not needlessly long. So, but you know, shorter games are also nice too, because sometimes you don't want to live with the game. Sometimes you just want to play it and finish it and move on.
I feel you. And I feel like the very wide scale for where this game could land in terms of length is probably something like between 40 to 120 hours. And I think all of that is still long to me. But I don't mind. Again, Assassin's Creed, I don't know, historically has always been like this meaty, this game series that I play on like during this summer doldrums or just like the long weeks and months of summer when less stuff is going on. So it's the one series I don't really care how long it is, and I think this Valhalla will probably fit into that for me. Are there any other like tidbits that we kind of missed here in terms of what's new, what we know, what we saw, what we feel? Can throw axes.
Yeah, can throw axes, can dual wield axes. I wonder, I was kind of like looking to see if that was like a real thing. Like, did people ever actually dual wield weapons in general, like two swords, two axes? I was reading some posts that said like, not, you know, like there's some evidence for it, but then some not for it. Typically you had a shield and your shield was a weapon too. Like, this doesn't really probably happen that much in games, but like smashing a dude with your shield is like a really good like attack. And it's usually, at least for me, I think of a shield as like, I'm just going to hide behind it until he's done swinging. But I guess historically it's like kind of a huge weapon.
Shield.
There were dual wielders with swords and like a dagger thing with a hook that you could grab the other guy's sword and possibly break it. I forget what it was called. I think it was just called a sword breaker.
Breaker.
Yeah, it had like grooves and you could catch the guy's sword. I don't know if you would really break it, but you would sort of catch his blade in your groove of your dagger, and so he couldn't.
Damn, video games are got some work to do. We didn't just use shit forever.
I don't know if anyone ever ran around with two axes at once.
Probably not. Sounds
too heavy. I would probably keep a shield and one axe, maybe.
Well, bad game then. Bad game.
Well, he doesn't have a shield. He's got a shield and two axes and a third axe that he throws. Yeah, he's got a lot of weapons. He's got wrist blades. He's got assassin blades.
Well, actually, it's unknown whether this guy is an assassin or not. And I mean, that's probably a big lore point for a lot of people. I'm not sure I give a shit, but there's some mystery around this character's purpose.
He's got an assassin blade. Wouldn't that make him an assassin?
Does he actually have one? Why do I see this?
Yeah, in the cinematic trailer, he jumped the dude in the eye with it.
Wait, no, you're totally right.
You'd have to be.
Why was he's I thinking he assassin. Didn't? Yeah,
I don't know.
Right. Well, wasn't I don't know.
There was one game that was started with a fake out or something.
That's what it was. That's what's got me. That's what's
you
got
actually me. You played for like a few hours as a Templar or something.
Yeah. Before they
switch. Yeah. I can't remember which one that was.
Okay. It's coming back to me. I'm just saying, like, Assassin's Blades don't. They're not a sure thing.
Plus, his came out of the top of his wrist instead of under his wrist. Isn't that where they usually come from, under the wrist?
I think so. I'm sure there's probably like a 40-minute video we could watch right now that's already out about this examining the blade itself. But Assassin's Creed Valhalla, didn't get to learn as much as we wanted to, but I'm sure it's going to be a slow trickle of information over the summer.
Oh, yeah.
E3 or whatever.
We should maybe have a pool for how many official trailers get released. Because they do a lot. Doesn't Ubisoft do a lot?
They typically do. They typically have a pretty good and robust game plan for press releases and trailers and so on. But this is holiday 2020. Barring, you know, unforeseen circumstances and assuming their remote working strategy is working out. But it's cool. There's games still coming out. Games are still coming out despite the pandemic and such. So that's good. It's good. 14 studios going. 14 studios, you say? Yeah.
I that sounded that. Right when I said it, but I'm not sure.
Well, I'm just going to quote you on it anyway. Okay. I'm excited. We'll see. It's going to be real interesting playing this game. Any RPG in the era of Cyberpunk, which is still coming out later this year. I think RPGs are going to be placed in sort of a competitive or at least a interesting field, at least based on what people are playing and how people are going to compare what they play in terms of RPGs. Because RPG snobs, including myself, are the worst. So picky about our stuff. All right. Well, that's going to do it for Valhalla and chatting about Valhalla. And unless you have any closing comments about Vikings or beard braids.
Yeah, I hope there's a lot of beard options.
I really hope so, too. If there's not. And,
I mean, if there's a tattoo parlor, there's got to be like a beard kiosk where you go and get different types of braids.
I'm into that.
Yeah, me too.
But thanks, Chris. Thanks for chatting Assassin's Creed. I'm sure we'll be talking about this a couple times over the next year or two.
Hell yeah.
All right. Next up, we got nothing. It's the end of the show. You can catch the show every week, pcgamer.com/tag/podcast. Go to youtube.com/pcgamer for the VOD after the fact. You can go to Spotify or iTunes to catch us. Get subscribed, leave us ratings, give us some feedback. We love it. And the show will be weekly again from now on. I'm done moving. Knocking on wood, I'm done moving. No more moving games for a while. Down in Austin now. Loving it. Loving that I'm in a new place that I can't explore. But hey, we're all in the same boat.
Same Viking boat.
Same Viking boat. And we're all paddling and yelling and ready to burn a village down to the ground, metaphorically speaking. But until next week, don't forget to what?
Play games.
All right, buddy. I gotta like commission Emma or
just record someone saying it and then play it, because I can't remember what I'm supposed to say. You gotta prep me.
You really can't remember? All right. Well, maybe it's my fault.
Game on.